This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by WPBoost.net. If you care about speed and conversion and SEO of your website or your clients' websites, then you better check out WPBoost.net. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Nate Guggia. He's a content creator and brand marketer at Job Portraits, and he's also the author of Nate is Learning, a newsletter by, about, and for professional people. So Nate, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This is a great honor.
So let's just start with, what are people? Who are people?
Yeah, people, you know, that is now expanding. I think as like organizational culture is becoming more of a top of mind subject, especially, you know, with the world that we live in now. People are really thinking about how organizations treat their people. Yeah. And so I think, like, you know, this started as something that HR paid attention to, right, trickle down to talent acquisition and recruiting. And I think now across the board, function leaders, hiring managers, and employees are becoming, they're all people. It's just, it's who we look to when we're looking at the companies that we want to work with and be part of. Like, it's just, there's a lot of pieces now to it.
So it's not just a rebranding of HR, right? I mean, it's like you have at the C-level, you have head of people, right? I mean, that maybe is, you mentioned the word culture. I mean, is maybe seen as like HR is a function still, but that head of people maybe is much more of a global, like, kind of almost like, how are we doing kind of officer.
You know, it is. You know, just to say too, I'm really happy that HR is rebranding to people. I think it's just more like modern terminology that just,
yes, right.
I think HR has been boxed in to a role and a perception of that role for far too long. But you know, if I look at like, the things that I talk about and the people who care about the things I talk about, the audience is pretty wide. And I've noticed that even people in the product world, in engineering and, you know, roles that you wouldn't think normally care about this, right, stuff are, yeah, really starting to like, to pay attention to what's happening in on that side of the company.
So you write frequently about, but I picked up on a fairly recent post using the term employer branding. I wonder if you could, I know that big companies and small companies may look at those two things or that term, you know, in different ways. But I wonder if there's, first off, if you could unpack it a little bit, but also let's talk about it a little bit in terms of maybe small to mid-sized businesses too.
Yeah, sure. And you're right. I think it does vary a little bit depending on the size and the maturity of the organization. But generally speaking, it's the perception that both employees and job candidates have of what, mm-hmm, it's like to work at your company. And I think the most important thing to realize is that perception exists regardless of what you do. It's right there. And now employer branding is an effort to influence that perception. And it's not to influence it in a negative way or a manipulative way, but it's really to help position yourselves as an employer of choice. And we can talk about ways to do that, but that's really what it comes down to. And I think one thing I wanted to add too is that now the employee side is extremely important because there's a lot of ways for us to talk and share. And so, employer branding for a long time was like, how do we market ourselves to candidates? And there has to be like close attention paid to how do we market ourselves back to our employees as well? Because they are really the influencers that drive a lot of this ultimately.
It's funny. I'm harking back to the early days of social media when all these companies had social media policies. You know, it's like you had to go through legal to tweet. You know, it seems like those doors have been pretty much blown off. I mean, that's a little bit of what you're alluding to, is that there's lots of ways for people to shape the brand, if you will.
You know, yes. And there are still some antiquated policies that have not been reviewed in a long time. And I get messages from people on, especially on LinkedIn, which is where I'm most active, that say along the lines of, I wish I could do this,
right?
But I'm handcuffed by my company, and it makes me, it's mind boggling to me, but they do still exist.
Well, so when you talk about branding, period, any kind of branding, you know, a lot of times, you're so right. I mean, that it is what the collective market perceives, not what you put out there. Mm-hmm. And so is there an attempt by some to take this concept and say, okay, what do we want, you know, the market to believe our brand, our employer, you know, branding is? I mean, is it possible? Do people get really tripped up, I guess, is my main thing, saying that they try to actually make it something it might not be?
Yes. And it's easy to do. It's easy to just show the shiny stuff, the good side, right, all the great things. But there's an approach that I'm a big advocate for, which is this idea of like attract and repel, if you want to think of it that way. And you know, a lot of this stuff has been around on the sales and marketing side.
For years. It's just marketing, right? Yeah,
it really is. But employer branding is just, let's say, they've arrived late to the party. And so this stuff is like trickling into employer branding. And it's one of these things where it's like, especially depending on the types of candidates that you're looking to attract, more senior level, especially, like they can smell BS a mile away, and they want to know, like, what are the unique challenges? How does leadership think? Like, what is most relevant and relatable? And I think it's really, really important to push hard on the truth, because volume, when it comes down to it, volume for a recruiting team, it's the enemy of recruiting. Yeah. You know, it's just like you actually don't want volume. You want people who initially resonate with this, with your message, good and bad, and want to opt themselves in, because that leads to more productive conversations, higher conversions. Now we're talking marketing again. You know, but that's really the name of the game. And so positioning yourself as the fun, whatever kind of organization, it just isn't working anymore. It's really now coming down to like real talk, and that's what people are looking for.
So I hear you kind of saying the good and the bad, particularly at a higher level. It's like, what really are the challenges here? Not the, you know, not the marketing speak. I mean, where might we fail is actually a message that you can put out there.
It is. You know, one question that we ask when we're interviewing, because a lot of, I mean, the work that we do, we actually get paid to ask really good questions ultimately and turn that into content. And one of our most favorite questions is when we're writing profiles on employees or leadership is, fast forward 2 years and the organization is dead. Why did it fail? You know, and that's a hard question. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it draws out the things that are challenging right now. And you know, you can really rally people around that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's somebody who can be extremely motivated by that, and those are the people that you want. And there's somebody who might take pause and go, you know what, like maybe I need a different type of company.
Yeah.
And I can go find that. And that's
the repel part. Yeah.
That's the repel part. Yeah.
So where do you see companies typically get this wrong? I mean, they've gone to a seminar or a workshop and come back, you know, fired up with this new idea of employer branding. You know, where do they immediately go wrong?
Yeah. Well, there's, generally speaking, they go wrong on execution. And what I mean by that is lack of, and the reason for that is, especially like, you know, the world that I live in mostly when it comes to employer branding is startups, you know, usually mid-stage, we'll say, like, you know, raised a couple rounds, hired a good amount of people. But even for younger organizations, employer branding is usually led by a team of one or very few who are also managing a lot of different responsibilities. And so, but going back to like your original question about people, this usually falls on the lap of somebody, of a people person. It might be the head of people. It might be the head of talent. It might be somebody in recruiting ops who is just really passionate about this, who raises their hand and says, let me take this on and give it a try. It's employer branding doesn't have the built-in credibility and awareness that marketing has at organizations. Whereas a CMO will have a team and resources and budget and all of stuff to bring it to life. That's what they do. Employer branding doesn't have that yet for most organizations. And so they'll get excited about the ideas, but when it comes to execution, everything stops because there just isn't the resources. And frankly, there typically isn't the skill set to do it yourself.
And now let's hear a word from our sponsor. The website has become the hub of your business. But if that website loads slowly, people, visitors, they won't tolerate that. And guess what? Neither will Google. It's become an increasingly important factor in ranking your websites, how fast your site loads. If you want to find out if you've got an issue with this, if you want to find out how to fix this, check out WPBoost.net and see if they can help you identify how to make your site load faster. That's WPBoost.net. So are we sort of just talking about good marketing for hiring, or is it more than that?
That's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, really, that's the way that I see it. It just touches a different side of the organization. And you know what? Now, even now, with the way that buyers are thinking and paying attention to this stuff, because we have so many options as consumers, right? There's only a few companies that are just like the option. For the most part, we have a lot of options. And so we're weighing in this cultural dynamic in our decision making as buyers. And so I think there is just a lot of overlap between the two now, between employer branding and corporate branding, but I do think that's really what it comes down to.
So this might be a hard question without like going with an Apple or a Google, you know, as the answer that everybody would know. Are there some people that you think are doing this well?
Yeah, there are. I'll give you a couple like smaller organizations that do this really well. One is Buffer. I don't know if you're familiar with Buffer. Are you?
I was going to ask you a question about them because I think they do some things really interesting.
So, you know, Buffer, I'll tell you, when you can go to somebody's website or their career site or read one of their culture blogs and just get them, that's something really special. You know, they do it through their copywriting. You can feel the energy. You know what it's like to be part of that team. They talk a lot about their remote work policies. They talk about their compensation plans. They talk about everything. And it's just like you read it and you go, oh, this is so refreshing. And you get who they are. And I think it's just their DNA. You know, it's not something that they're contriving. It's just who they are. So they do a really wonderful job. There's a couple, let me see, a couple other companies that are doing a really good job. There's an organization called TaxJar, which is they're a fully remote team. They're based out of Boston. I mean, they have tax software. It's like nothing sexy whatsoever, but they've started doing a really good job of just putting out like authentic content, you know, things like that. They put a lot of emphasis into it, and they're a small team too.
So I want to come back to both of those examples. But do you find that companies are actually able, I mean, this is always the question with marketing. And since we're sort of talking about marketing anyway, you know, how do you tie this to ROI? And I'm sure that's a question so many people get. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you've got to unearth several levels of it attracts us the best people, you know, all those kinds of things. Like, how do you get ROI out of that? But if somebody is saying, you know, should we put resources into this? Like a lot of people, what's the ROI?
Yeah.
Or how do you measure it at least?
Yeah. That's the golden question, really. Here's how I think about it. We can talk about it qualitatively and quantitatively. When it comes to numbers, there's really only usually a couple things that matter. And then there's a lot of breadcrumbs that lead to that happening. I think when it comes to employer branding, especially for like mid to early stage companies, it is a talent acquisition lever. It is designed to drive quality candidates. Measuring quality is very difficult. That's That's very like qualitative. But I think if you look at conversions, to me, conversions meaning a hire, a new hire, is the equivalent to marketing's revenue. If you're just going to like grab one thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but then from there, I'll tell you what I actually think is most powerful. And this takes a little bit of time. So I just gave you the number and, but I think ultimately it is how is what you're creating resonating with your audience? And the people who actually have that information are the recruiters. I think recruiters are the greatest asset to employer branding. And I think whoever's leading this should have a recurring meeting with recruiters who are using this to help to try to attract candidates to hear what candidates are saying, what they care about most, what questions they're asking over and over again. Take that feedback, turn it into content, test it, get the feedback from the recruiters and repeat it, because that's how you start creating for your audience. And then the other aspect of it, there's one more part to it, is every time you create something for an external audience, I think you should share it across the organization internally, because, you know, we talked earlier about some of these, like these big roadblocks that employer branding has internally. The biggest one is just a pure lack of awareness. This is new terminology that like people in my circle understand and get excited about, but outside of our little bubble, most people are going like, what is this stuff? You know? And when you can show something to people outside of your bubble and get them excited about it, that starts getting buy-in and support, and people go, oh, that's why we need this. And that's why it makes sense. Yeah.
I think you just described effective internal communications, didn't you?
I guess I did.
You know? Because I think that some of these great examples, you used Buffer, so I'll go straight to them. I mean, I think a lot of what they share externally was stuff that just bubbled up in staff meetings. That whole salary conversation, I have to believe that they shared that internally before they ever decided to, you know, make it, you know, public down to the, you know, actual, you know, number that people were getting paid. And I think that they probably got so much buy-in internally that they thought, well, maybe this is a good idea to share externally. I'm just guessing, but.
Yep. Nope. I think you're spot on with that. I mean, I think there's a huge opportunity to just like, I mean, we talk so much on Zoom and, you know, right, all this now there's so many opportunities to just hit record during meetings where you think you're going to talk about something that other people might care about and clip it and share it. That's the kind of stuff we're looking for now. And we're really set up well to do that. Yeah. It just takes like some creative thinking. But it's content marketing, you know, that's what it's what we're talking about here.
Does it take guts too sometimes?
Does it what?
Does it take guts sometimes too though? Does I mean, in other words, yeah. In other words, I would think there would be some companies that would think, oh, I'm sure that there were people that were very turned off by Buffer's sharing of their salaries and thinking, oh, that's terrible. I would never want, you know, I would never do that. I would never want my company to do that. Now, I think as it turns out on the whole, they got more, you know, kudos than they did, you know, somebody is saying negatives. But for a lot of companies, isn't that the issue? It's like, yeah, we want to be more transparent, but like we're scared to.
Yes, that's what it comes down to. It's a fear thing. I mean, we push every one of our clients to be transparent about compensation. Like when they post a job description, to give a range, give a number, whatever, and hardly any of them do it because it's fear, right? It's like this whole fear thing. But the thing is like that's a very major box that we need to check in order to know if this is even worth the time. It makes sense conceptually, but man, the mindset is like, yeah, it does. It absolutely takes guts.
I think the salary one's a really easy one to pick on because it also means that you have to actually have a rationale behind how those numbers were figured. And you have to hopefully be fair and equitable in what you're doing, or at least be able to justify why you're doing what you're doing. I mean, that's the bigger conversation, isn't it?
I mean, there was something, I don't know if you saw it, that came out, I don't know, a couple months ago, maybe. It was the founder of Coinbase, their Silicon Valley startup. Mm-hmm. Did you happen to see that?
I did not.
Okay. he posted about their new policy of basically no politics at work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he laid his case out, you know, and it was like, hey, if employees don't like this, we have severance packages lined up, but this is the policy moving forward. And he took a really hard stance and, you know, like he got a lot of flack for it, because like in Silicon Valley, that's like something you would really never talk about. But at the same time, he got a lot of kudos too as a founder. But I mean, that's an example of somebody really putting themselves out there. And I think as a result, they had like 60 or 80 employees that have left. You know, and I'm not saying like it's not about the messaging. It's just about somebody who's like saying, this is who we are. This is what I stand for, you know, and it definitely draws a line in the sand.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're really talking about is authenticity. So if that's really who you are, you know, then don't hide it. And same with, you know, you said that you think it's in Buffer's DNA. I would guess, because that one singular blog post probably got shared about 20 million times, that actually generated revenue for them by being authentic. You know, even if it generated some negative comments, I'm guessing not only did it attract people to them, it attracted customers.
I mean, I would imagine this isn't the first time that you and I have talked about Buffer.
Yeah.
Right. And there's so much value in this like peer-to-peer sharing of names. I mean, really there is. It's like, that's like, you can't buy that level of brand awareness.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah.
But again, I think, you know, even if I don't agree with you, I think I would definitely agree with the siding on being authentic. You know, if it makes somebody mad, I'd rather have you tell the truth. You know, and I think that's what people, that's why I think people can respect that, and are looking for that. And I think we're inching closer and closer to, you know, a lot of people accepting that.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. And I think, you're right. We accept that. What we don't accept is when you tell us something is one way.
Yeah.
And then we get in and realize that it's not.
Yeah. Far worse.
Yeah. Far worse. Yeah.
Far worse. So Nate, tell people where they can find out more about wherever you want to send people, maybe to Nate is Learning or any other resources that they might follow and continue this discussion with you.
Sure. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. Nate is Learning is my newsletter that is a replica of what I post on LinkedIn. I realized like many months ago that a lot of content just gets lost in the busyness of the feed. And I wanted to give people who care about my stuff a more convenient way. And so Nate is Learning is on Substack, which is the place to find it. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active like every day.
And we'll have links in the show notes for those that would like to continue to follow Nate. So Nate, thanks for stopping by. This was a fun conversation and hopefully we'll run into each other someday when people get back out there on the road.
All right. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it.